I want to start out this morning by reading a children's folk tale to you. You heard this when you were a little kid, but it's a good lead to our discussion this morning. It's called Chicken Little. Chicken Little was in the woods one day, and an acorn fell on her head. It scared her so much she trembled all over. She shook so hard that half her feathers fell out. Chicken Little yelled, "Help, help, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. I got to go tell the king." So she ran right after to tell the king. And on the way, she met Henny Penny. "Where are you going, Chicken Little?" "Oh, help, the sky is falling." "How do you know?" "I saw it with my own eyes. I heard it with my own ears. And part of it fell on my head." Henny Penny says, "This is terrible, just terrible. We'd better hurry up." So they both ran away as fast as they could. And soon they met Ducky Lucky. And Ducky Lucky said, "Where are you going, Chicken Little and Henny Penny?" Chicken Little and Henny Penny said, "The sky is falling, the sky is falling. We're going to tell the king." Ducky Lucky says, "Well, how do you know?" And Chicken says, "We saw it with our own eyes. We heard it with our own ears. And part of it fell on our head." Ducky Lucky says, "Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, we better run." So they all ran down the road as fast as they could, and they met Goosey Lucy walking down the roadside. Goosey Lucy says, "Hello there, where are y'all going in such a hurry?" Chicken Little says, "We're running for our lives." Henny Penny says, "The sky is falling." Ducky Lucky says, "We're running to the king." Goosey Lucy says, "Well, how do you know the sky is falling?" And Chicken Little says, "We saw it with our own eyes, heard it with our own ears, and part of it fell on my head." Goosey Lucy says, "Goodness, I better run with you." So they all ran in great fright across the field, and before long they met Turkey Lurkey strutting back and forth. Turkey Lurkey says, "Hello there, Chicken Little, Henny Penny, Ducky Lucky, and Goosey Lucy. Where are y'all going in such a hurry?" Chicken Little says, "Help, help. Henny Penny says, we're running for our lives. Ducky Lucky says, the sky is falling. Goosey Lucy says, and we're running to tell the king." And Turkey Lucky says, "Well, how do you know the sky is falling?" And they all say, "We saw it with our own eyes. We heard it with our own ears. And part of it fell on Chicken Little's head." "Oh, dear, I always suspected the sky would fall someday. I better go with you." So they ran with all of their might until they met Foxy Loxy. "Well, well," said Foxy Loxy, "where are you rushing on such a fine day?" Chicken Little, Henny Penny, Ducky Lucky, Goosey Lucy, Turkey Lurkey all together yelled, "Help, help, help, it's not a fine day at all. The sky is falling, we're running to tell the king." And Foxy Loxy says, "Well, how do you know the sky is falling?" And they all say, "We saw it with our own eyes, we heard it with our own ears, and part of it fell on our head." Foxy Loxy says, "I see. Well, then follow me. I'll show you the way to the king." So Foxy Loxy led Chicken Little, Henny Penny, Ducky Lucky, Goosey Lucy, and Turkey Lurkey across the field and through the woods. He led them straight to his den. And they never saw the king to tell him that the sky is falling. What is that children folktale? It's a lesson in fear. It's a lesson in how Satan works. It's very apropos to the world in which we live today. In 2 Timothy 4, and beginning with verse 3, the Bible says, "The time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust they will heap to themselves teachers, because they have itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned to fables." Not fables as obvious as Chicken Little. But people today are like Turkey Lurkey, Ducky Lucky, and all those. If one person says it, it must be true. Especially if you hear it from the right source. If you don't believe in something, you'll believe anything. And so people in today's world see it on television and it has to be true. People read it in the newspaper and it has to be true. People see it in Time or Newsweek or The Wheel. It has to be true. Matthew 6:8, beginning with verse 26, Jesus says, "Why are you so fearful, O ye of little faith?" No, it's not hard to fear, but Christians should not be fearful. There's always a foxy lox for you to take advantage of us. And Satan works in so many ways. You don't believe that? Pick up that flyer that Carl and Julie just gave you and look down the list. Kind of interesting, the sun right now is moving into the constellation Cancer. We have a guy on television that is telling people that because the sun is moving into the constellation Cancer, 90% of the world's population is going to have cancer. Scientifically proven. Really? That's the kind of stuff that is thrown at us. Our kids play video games. Is that the reality? We see the political charade going on and on and on. We have an election coming up. People on both sides are scared to death. Let me point out a couple of things about fear. Number one, our fear limits us in what we can do. You realize that? Being fearful will strangle you. Matthew 17, beginning with verse 14, Jesus does one of his amazing miracles. And the man who had the miracle had a son who was having what appeared to be epileptic convulsions. And the man says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and sore vexed. For oft times he falls into the fire and often into the water. I brought him to your disciples, and they could not cure him." So how does Jesus respond? This is a direct quote. Jesus says, "Oh, faithless and fearful generation." We're a faithless and fearful generation. And it's having a terrible toil on all of us. We've just heard the news of Lena's family having another tragedy. Boy, they've just gotten hit again and again this year. Faithless and fearful. It's easy to be faithless and fearful when things like that keep happening. By the way, just for the record, I am 1,000% convinced that suicide is a mental illness, that people who overpower God's built-in desire to keep living are not in control of what they do. You can talk about the source, but let's not be judgmental. God is the judge in this. He knows where this came from and what the tragic result has been. You know, in this case, the disciples said to Jesus, "Why? Why couldn't we do it?" And Jesus says, "Because of your unbelief. If you have faith as small as the grain of a mustard seed, you can say to a mountain, 'Be moved to yonder place,' and it shall be moved. Nothing shall be impossible for you." Now, he's not talking about moving dirt and rock. He's talking about life. We are paralyzed Because we fear the unknown. The cover of Time magazine for this issue that just came out yesterday is, should we renew our concern about UFOs? I pick a thing up, I'm like, really? Boy, they must have been short on copy. But we are fearful. So we're afraid of aliens. We're afraid of asteroid strikes. Fear paralyzes us. Remember the story in Matthew 14:27 about Peter walking on the water? Do you ever think about what happened there? The Bible says Peter was come down out of the ship and he walked on the water to go to Jesus. Boy, wouldn't that have been incredible? You're walking on the water and here's Jesus right there in front of you. And what happens? The Bible says, but then he saw the wind was boisterous. Oh, yeah, look at me. I'm out here in the middle of all these white cats. And he was afraid and began to sink. See, fear limits us in what we can do. And Jesus even says to him, why did you doubt? Hey, man, you were walking on the water. You were doing great. And what's the problem? Fear. Where do we start that we don't stop because we are afraid? I can't tell you how many times I had second thoughts about what I was doing in my ministry because of fear. I was afraid I was going to get fired. At one point, I was afraid my home congregation was going to kick me out. Every time I got on the airplane and headed out of South Bend, I was afraid of what might happen to my family because we had threats. Fear is one of the great tools Satan has, and he uses it on you. He didn't just use it on people that are out publicly doing something. He stops you from doing what you know you ought to do. Don't be afraid. Another thing is that our fears will call us to doubt that God will provide. You know, one of the great stories in the Old Testament is in 1 Kings, the 17th chapter, starting with verse 2. You probably read this story. I wonder if you ever thought about what happened here. The word of the Lord came to Elijah. Leave here, turn eastward and hide in the Kereth ravine east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook. I have ordered the ravens to feed you there. So he did what the Lord had told him. He went to Kereth ravine east of the Jordan and he stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. But here's the hero of the story. There was a widow at Zarephath. The Bible says, starting with verse 7, now time later, the brook had dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Verse 8, then the word of the Lord came to him. Verse 9, go at once to Zarephath of Sidon and stay there. I have commanded a widow in that place to supply you with food. We have no indication that God spoke verbally to the woman. We don't know how she was commanded. But she knew God was going to provide. So verse 10, so he went to Zarephath, and when he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so I can have a drink? As she was going to get it, he called and bring me, please, a piece of bread. And she replied, as surely as the Lord lives, I don't have any bread. All I have is a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug, and I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. Wow. Talk about poverty. Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first make a small cake of bread for me and for what you have and bring it to me. And then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Okay, here comes the promise of God. A jar of flour will not be used up. A jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord gives rain upon the land. And we'll go on with verse 15 just to show you how this ends. She went away and did as Elijah told her. So there was food every day for Elijah, for the woman and her family. For the jar of flour was not used up and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. And you say, well, that's a good story. What's your experience with life? God speaks to us. No, he doesn't kick me out and stand before you in physical form and lecture you. But he speaks to us through his word. And God does his best work through the feeble. I have a guy that I've known for years and years and years. His name is Alvin Jennings. Some of you have heard of him. He's done a lot of good work. He and his wife were married 58 years, and then she left him because he was so committed to God. He's put up with a lot. We were talking about the congregation here and the congregation where he is. They have 1,200 members. And he hadn't asked me how big we were. We were talking about benevolent programs, and he said something to me about, well, guess what? We actually served 5 people under the viaduct last week. I said, really? Is that the only program you guys have to feed people? He said, well, yeah, but he said that's better than they've been doing. I said, guess how many people we have served in the last week? He said, well, how many? I said, 92. He said, well, I didn't know the church in Dowagiac was that big. I said, well, how big do you think we are? He said, well, if you're feeding 92 people, you must have 700 or 800 members. I said, would you believe 30? See, God does his best work through the feeble. We may be feeble, but God's doing some great work here. In Hebrews, the 13th chapter, beginning with verse 5, the writer of Hebrews says, let your life be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For God has said, I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee. So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear what man shall do to me. The Lord is my helper. Is that in your thinking? Is that in your understanding? Remember the Sermon on the Mount, beginning with, in chapter 6 with verse 24, Jesus talks about what we need. And he says to all of us and to the people in the Sermon on the Mount, look what God does. He takes care of the grass. He takes care of the birds. They don't sow. They don't harvest. Look at the lily of the field. Solomon was not dressed up like this lily is. So don't worry about what you eat or what you drink. In Luke, the 12th chapter, beginning with verse 16, there's the story of the rich man who said, I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger barns. And then I'll take a long vacation. And there's an anti-retirement verse right after that, starting with verse 22. Because God says, okay, if you're going to sit on what you got, you're done. You're going to die tonight. I want to tell you something, folks. It is important to understand that our fear causes us to doubt what God provides. makes us afraid that we're not going to have enough. Do you remember Y2K? You know, that's one of the funniest stories in the history of America. Y2K. We had churches putting armed guards on their food pantry. We had people going underground. See, my final point here is that fears can negatively impact our ability to give to others. If you're filled with fear, if you're apprehensive about where you're going to eat tomorrow and what you're going to be able to do, that's exactly what's going to happen. Galatians, the 6th chapter, beginning of verse 10, says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, and he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Let us not become weary in well-doing." That's a message to us, folks. "Let us not become weary in well-doing, for in due season we will reap, if we don't faint. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially to them who are of the household of faith." Let me tell you something, folks. If I'm a Christian, and if I have money, you will not starve. That's part of the Christian system. That's how God works. This morning in our class, which was an exceptional class, we talked about the book of Esther. And about how God, who isn't mentioned in the book at all, provided for a group of his people who were about to be destroyed. The first century church rose to meet need. In Acts 2 and verse 44, the Bible says they sold their possessions and distributed to those who were in need. I really don't think that any of us have yet sold something we needed to make sure somebody had enough to eat. I don't think that's happened to us. Not yet. Are we afraid? In Acts 4, beginning at verse 34, we're told, as the first century church met, there was nobody that lacked what they needed. But you see, if we're afraid, then we're going to put an armed guard on what we have. We're going to build bigger barns instead of using what God has given us. And the history of the New Testament was that churches that did well were churches who did not have fear and who gave abundantly. Example, 1 Corinthians 8, beginning with verse 1. "The churches of Macedonia, in great trial of affliction and in great poverty, abounded in the riches of their liberality. I bear record that beyond their power, they were willing to give of themselves." They gave their own selves. So we can justify this building only on the basis that we use it to serve the community. If it just sits here 7 days a week or 6 days a week or even 5 days a week and isn't used, we can't justify that. It is only because we're not afraid, because we're willing to use this structure and willing to use what God has given us individually and collectively, that we can make a difference. The challenge to this is, well, you're not being realistic. Really? What do you mean by realistic? Is it realistic to believe that God, who has provided for his people over the entire history of mankind, will also look over us? Is it realistic to believe that on the first day of the week, as 1 Corinthians 16:2 says, it's a good thing to pool our resources? And that, by the way, is not just a mechanical thing, it's worship. That we worship God by not being afraid to give. You know, we teach ourselves to fear giving. We teach our kids sometimes. Giving in 2 Corinthians 8:7 is called a grace. Are we so afraid to use what God has given us that we are unwilling to share with others? 2 Corinthians 8:7 refers to it as a grace. God promises in Luke 6, beginning with verse 38, given and will be given back to you. People will heap to you great riches, heaped up, running over. And Acts 20 and verse 35 says it in simple words, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And you know, we get a little tiny bit of a taste of that when we give to our kids. Or somebody else's kids. I mean, when Christmas comes around, what do you look forward to? Giving your grandkid a new toy? Or having someone give you a toy? At this stage of our lives, we all understand that, don't we? And don't you see that's the way God is as well? We are most happy when we are able to give. Listen to Foxy Woxy. Follow me and I will show you the way. You want to hear that in adult terms? Turn on your television set. You want to hear that in adult terms? Pick up your newspaper. Read the second section. We are happiest when we have learned to give. And the final point I would make is what does fear have to do with you and becoming a Christian? What does fear have to do with you and obeying God? Let me tell you something. In the old days, preachers used to eloquently profess to understand what was going to happen to people who didn't do what they said. They preached such scathing, violent, abusive sermons that they actually scared people into coming down the aisle. And how long did that last? See, Jesus didn't scare people. What Jesus did was to impress them with the love of God. With the fact that this life, with all of its trouble, with all of its pain, with all the stuff that goes on, look at the sheet you got today. It's the worst we're ever going to have to put up with. That's the gospel of Jesus, a God of love, of compassion, of understanding. So what keeps you from obeying God? Are you afraid of what your peers will say? Are you afraid of what your family will say? Are you afraid you'll fail as a Christian? 1 John says we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Don't fear failure, because God's help will enable you to succeed. My prayer today is that you will not follow the foxy loxies of the world, but follow Jesus, who wants you to not be afraid. Why did you fear? I sure don't want to hear that from God on the day of judgment, do you? I want to know that in spite of my fears and my trepidations and my concerns, that I loved God enough to serve Him. If you're subject to His invitation, won't you come to the front and express that? As together we stand and sing to encourage you, won't you please come?